This is Fresh Air. My guest Milton Viorst is the Middle East correspondent for The New Yorker. Before the war, he'd traveled to Iraq several times. He returned in the spring to see what had changed and what had remained the same. Viorst reported on his trip in the June 24th issue of The New Yorker. Iraq is suspected of hiding some of its remaining nuclear weapons material in violation of the UN ceasefire agreement. Today, President Bush said there is incontrovertible evidence that Iraq violated the ceasefire by refusing to allow UN inspectors to tour a site where nuclear materials are suspected to be hidden. The president called Saddam Hussein a brutal bully, but would not say what the U.S. might do in response. But in today's New York Times, it was reported that administration and military officials have been discussing possible military options for dealing with Iraq's bomb-making capabilities that survived the war. I asked Viorst what he thought about the military option to enforce the UN agreement.
Well, I think we've probably dealt with Iraq with enough force. I think we ought to try doing a little negotiating, which we didn't do from the very beginning. I don't think we have to deceive ourselves. Saddam Hussein is a tough guy. He wound up with this war in far better shape than anybody anticipated he would be able to do. I'm sure he's playing every card he possibly can, and conceivably even the nuclear card. I don't have any inside information on that. But I think that force ought to be a last resort, as I felt it should have been, even in this war. I think we have to engage in some honest negotiation and try that. If it doesn't work, then we think of what else there is to do.
Well, the resolution to the end of the war required Iraq to dismantle all of its nuclear facilities. So the fact that it's been hiding nuclear capabilities is in violation.
Yes, I agree with that, and I think it ought to be taken care of. I don't have any inside information. I'm willing to accept at face value the fact that they conceivably are hiding nuclear materials. But I think that before we go about this with more bombing, that we ought to try to work it out in some reasonable fashion.
Let me ask you though about negotiations, since the presence of more nuclear material shows what a liar Saddam Hussein can be. How do you think about honest negotiations again?
I think honest negotiations assume that people lie and that measures are taken to confirm to, what's that word, to...
ratify?
Not just to ratify, but forms of aerial surveillance and 10 other kinds of technological facilities we now have at our disposal to make sure that the terms of the agreement are kept. This is true. This has been true in all our negotiations with the Soviet Union. We assumed they were not going to operate honestly, and so we took the verification procedures as essential to an agreement. And I think that should also be applied to Iraq. We did not contemplate bombing Moscow, and I don't think we should contemplate bombing Baghdad. We've done more than enough of that already.
Let's talk about your recent trip to Iraq. What were the dates of your trip?
I was there during almost the entire month of April.
Were you surprised that the bombing seemed to be as precise as the military told us it was?
I was very surprised. I am old enough to remember, even though a few years later, some of the damage that was done to the cities of Europe in World War II. And certainly I expected it, and I think even our military people were kind of surprised at how well they did. Talk about pinpoint bombing, surgical strikes, and all those other words which we laughed at during Vietnam. I must say our people have done a remarkable job of perfecting those procedures, and those terms now genuinely do apply.
Were your friends and sources any more or less intimidated by the government, and were they any more or less free with the information that they gave you?
Well, they talked a lot more, but even during the period that I was there, as time has passed and Saddam has actually rebuilt his structure, I think they became more cautious. I was surprised when I got there at the beginning of April of how ready practically everybody I stumbled into was to denounce Saddam. People were genuinely angry at him. Maybe they supported him against the United States in terms of not caving in to all of these threats and blusters that President Bush inflicted upon him. There was a certain amount of support for him. But at a certain point, they recognized that, Saddam really did a pretty dumb thing to think that he could stand up against the power of the United States, particularly the United States with its 30 allies.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Milton Viorst. He's the Middle East correspondent for The New Yorker. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more about his recent trip to Baghdad. This is Fresh Air. Milton Viorst is my guest, Middle East correspondent for The New Yorker magazine. The Bush administration had really hoped that Saddam would be overthrown from within. Obviously, that hasn't happened. Why do you think that hasn't happened?
Well, I think that it was incumbent upon the Bush administration to learn something about Iraq. The reason it didn't happen, the ostensible reason it didn't happen, is because he has this huge bath party and this huge secret service, which imposes a kind of mean, brutal discipline throughout the entire society. And it's very effective. It works very well. He has this huge bureaucracy, which depends upon him for its support, its money, its social prestige, and all the rest. And it works very well. But I think even more important than that, the kind of thing that it was incumbent upon our government to recognize if what we expected was for the Iraqis themselves to overthrow Saddam is that this is a country which is divided basically into three major population groups. The Shiites, who are Arab, the Kurds, who are Sunnis but who are not Arabs, and then there are the Sunni Arabs. So they all have their own culture. They all have their own society. And it's kind of a three-legged stool. And the Sunnis, who dominate the whole Baghdad region, the Kurds to the north, the Shiites to the south, are really the key to Saddam's survival, mainly because they are the principal force in Baghdad, but because Saddam also is a Sunni, and he represents continuity to them. He represents nationhood. The Shiites have their own agenda. They think in terms the way Iran does, in terms of Islamic fundamentalism. The Kurds are turned toward their countrymen in Kurds in Turkey, Kurds in Iran, Kurds in Syria. It is basically the Sunnis who think of themselves as the Iraqi nation. And if the Kurds and the Shiites want to join, fine, they're glad to have them. But there is this sense of Iraqi nationhood that has come down through century after century. And I think these Sunnis are quite ready to overthrow Saddam because of the terrible brutality of the regime. Most of the people I talked to were Sunnis because they are the kinds of people you meet in Baghdad. They are the intellectuals and the professors and the people who run the shops and the kinds of people who you naturally find congenial and convenient to deal with. And they were much more fearful of the possibility of the disintegration of the country through the revolutions of the Kurds and the Shiites than they were worried about the brutality. That was their second priority. And when the Kurds and the Shiites started their uprising early in March, basically the Sunnis said, listen, we really detest this guy, this Saddam Hussein. He has been brutal, miserable, and furthermore, he's been stupid in letting this war start from the first place. But we have an obligation to keep our country together, to keep the integrity and the unity of Iraq. And so they rallied around him. And this was totally predictable. I mean, it was not something that we had any right to be surprised by. Any medium-level scholar of the Middle East could have told President Bush that this was likely to happen.
You did a long interview with the former foreign minister, Tariq Aziz, when you were in Iraq. Was there anything he told you in the interview that made you see the events of the war or the events leading up to the war in a different light?
Tariq Aziz is a smart guy, and he is interesting to talk to. And I said to Tariq Aziz, you know, what did your government have in mind? Did you really think you were going to win this war? And he said, look, we were so angry at the United States for treating us with this contemptuousness, and we did our best to make overtures, and we thought we could negotiate this out, but President Bush not only refused to negotiate himself, but he managed to persuade all of his allies not even to talk with us. So the Soviet Union, we bumbled around with a few overtures with them, and that didn't work. The French, who were longtime friends of Iraq, wouldn't talk to us. The Germans, the Brits, all the others. And he said, you know, we got to the point where we looked at this as hopeless. And so I said, look, why didn't you throw in the towel and at least save the country? And he said, well, we thought our mindset was that our destiny had been set. There was no way for us to get out of it. And I sort of pulled at my hair and I said, look, the job of governments is to avoid this kind of destiny of predestination that you were, I mean, you are, the Saddam Hussein government is a government which is known to take the initiative when it feels it is in trouble. Well, he said, we felt that there was nothing that we could do and we simply had to accept our fate. Well, I found that very unsatisfactory, and I still find it unsatisfactory, and I'm reporting to you basically what Tariq Aziz said to me. But there is that kind of strain of fatalism that exists within the Arab mind, and I think that Saddam Hussein was persuaded by, not by Tariq Aziz, because I'm convinced that Tariq Aziz, because he has this Western-style mind and he understands that you can, there are always maneuvers and there are always things that you can do and you can play this force against that force. I think when things really got tough, Saddam, like a good Iraqi country boy, decided he was going to rely on his family and his old friends, and they gave him a lot of stupid advice. And the advice they gave him seemed to be that we're just going to hold out and somehow God will take care of us or something of that sort. I mean, I wasn't there, so I don't know. But that's the sense I have, that when it really came down to the end, it was like Hitler in the bunker, that reason no longer applied any longer, that what you did was what you thought you had to do, that the whole matter was out of your own hands. And as a Westerner, that I find that a kind of unsatisfactory way to deal with problems.
Do you think that there's going to be a next level of aftermath from the war in the Middle
East? Yeah, I think there's going to be a net level of aftermath. I remain convinced that the real threat to the interests of the United States lie with Iran. And Iran now no longer has the Iraqi army as a significant deterrent. Iraq is much weaker. Therefore, Iran is much stronger. We don't know what will happen. Iran has become a much greater influence in Kuwait and in Saudi Arabia. This is very dangerous, in my judgment, for the interests of the United States. What else has happened? I think the Sabah family, which is clearly the favorite of the president, he said repeatedly during the crisis that he was not concerned with bringing democracy to Kuwait. What he said was that he wanted to restore the legitimate government of Kuwait, this rather corrupt and inept, bumbling old family of Sabahs. They are now temporarily in power, but I don't have the impression that they can last more than, let's say, a year at the most. And I think if they fail, it's quite unclear how the interests of the United States will be affected. We have destabilized the whole region, in my judgment, by eschewing the opportunity to solve this problem by diplomacy and by going in and waging a war.
Well, Milton Vyorst, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Milton Vyorst is Middle East correspondent for The New Yorker magazine, and his article on his recent trip to Iraq is published in the June 24th issue of The New Yorker. This is Fresh Air.